Let's go ahead and start. Do you have any announcements or anything before you get into the economy stuff, or do you want to go ahead and do the economic stuff first?
I don't know. Let's proceed with that. I'll do the announcement. Tim is already aware of this, but I wanted you all to know that I am going to be retiring at the end of the year.
You mean it actually happens?
It does happen.
Congratulations.
I don't know what happens after that. They haven't said whether there's going to be a party or maybe a Viking funeral or whatever.
A trip to Tortuga.
How do you do on a burning log out to sea? Yeah.
So I'll see you all again in October, but the company is actively engaged in looking for a replacement, and there's been various times that shouldn't take more than 5 or 10 minutes, but in the meanwhile, Chris Gagne, who you have all met in the past, of course, still here, and we also have Austin Hill Clisby, who's actually sitting here with me now, asking to sit in on the meeting, and we have an additional portfolio officer up in Tacoma. So we're I think, in terms of the strength that we bring to these relationships, we're a lot stronger than we have ever been in the past, and I really feel good about the way I'm leaving the investment team. So, I'm looking now at the economic snapshot on your report, which is the first page after the cover page. And we have some new reports now. We hired a different vendor for these things, and so I'll walk you through the reports as we review the documents. The second quarter interesting in a couple of respects. It started out like gangbusters, and the market really pushed very uniformly across the board toward new highs. We kept getting very good numbers. The unemployment rate seems a little sticky, but that's because the participation rate is improving. That is, there are more people now who are considering themselves to be in the job pool. Inflation remains low. Global monetary policy is united. Every central bank around the world is of one mind, and that is to be as stimulative as possible. And corporate balance sheets are very strong. All of that, we had this sort of Goldilocks scenario that was evolving, and on the morning of May 22nd, the Dow Jones was up about 100 points, stayed up 100 until about 11 o'clock when the chairman of the Federal Reserve was making his monthly report to the Joint Finance Committee, and he said sort of inconveniently that quantitative easing would probably end this year. And the market went from going up 100 to down 100 instantly, and interest rates spiked pretty dramatically instantly. And so you have this sort of continuing conundrum, you know, that good news is bad news for the market. As we get better economic news, the reality that interest rates are going to go up and quantitative easing will come to an end is more and more certain, and that causes that has caused a number of global trades to become unwound. And so there we have what's called the carry trade, and we've got zero interest rates here, so you borrow money at zero, and you take your cash and you go to Asia and you invest it at something greater than zero and make a profit. If you're if you're given the information that interest rates are going to go up from zero, then the margin on your trade disappears, and you've got to unwind it. And so there was a global, massive unwinding of that carry trade at the end of May and the 1st of June. When you sell assets, especially when you have a panic sale of assets, the price goes down. Did someone have a question?
No.
Okay. The price goes down. So the price of bonds went down around the world. Interest rates accordingly went up around the world. And any stocks that were interest rate sensitive also went down. So we had a very volatile May, and June was pretty choppy as well. We made a fairly substantial recovery during the month of July and returned to those new highs that we had in early May. And today, we once again got fairly good news. Jobless claims were the lowest that they've been since October of 07. Inflation is under control, and so as a result, the Dow Jones at this very moment is down 241 points, or 1.5%, and the S&P is down 1.5%. So we have this theme that good news is bad news. The takeaway from all of this, and it's something that we've implemented in the portfolios, is that the May volatility was, I think, could be characterized as a shot across the bow for anybody that is overweight in fixed income. And we have, in the first week of July, we changed our forecast. As you know, we revise our economic forecast on a quarterly basis, and we only make allocation changes on the basis of that forecast. And our forecast is that rates are going to be headed up over the next 10 years or so. Now, that is from a fairly low base. And so you, if you start to work out the math, when you're looking at the total return on a bond, you're looking not only at the coupon, that is the interest that the bond pays, but you're also looking at the change in market value. So the interest that you earn plus or minus the change in market value is the total return on the bond. It is not unreasonable to expect that bonds will have a total return of about 2% annually over the next 10 years. If you consider that inflation at normal levels, according to the Fed, should be about 2 to 2.5%, then on a real inflation-adjusted basis, bonds are going to return something around zero or less than zero over the next 10 years. So if you're a long-term fixed income investor, bonds are probably highly suspect. On the other hand, bonds are still the most important source of diversification against stock market volatility. So you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. You're not going to get a strong long-term return from bonds, but you have to have them to protect against dips in the stock market. And we are 4 and a half years into the current bull, which means that a dip in the market, a correction of 10 to 20%, is becoming more and more probable. So given all that, we have raised the allocation in stocks in the capital growth portfolio and in the defined contribution plan by 5%. And we're using, to fill out that 5%, we've allocated that to small caps. Now, the primary rationale for allocating to small caps is that we have more confidence in the domestic economy than we do in Europe or Asia. and small caps tend not to be global. And so we have more of a pure domestic play by owning small caps. So that's the story as far as what we're doing in the allocation and what has happened since the last time we met. I guess looking forward, in addition to the interest rate scenario,
Rick, question for you, David Allen.
So what's the allocation right now between stocks and bonds as far as portfolio? You said you raised
several different ones.
The one you were just talking about.
The small cap stocks 5%.
Yeah, but what's the allocation? What's the general allocation as far as percentage of bonds that you?
Well,
have?
That's in the DV plan. There's a couple different plans, David.
So there's a couple of different places. So in the defined contribution plan, we were at a target of 57% equity, and we're now at 62% equity.
Okay.
In the capital growth account, we were at 82% equity, and now we're at about 88% equity.
Because we've got those cash buckets, those six cash buckets.
Right. We can be much more aggressive in the capital growth account. So our concerns beyond fixed income. So let me just sort of illustrate what might happen in fixed income. So we were, if you go back and look at that economic snapshot at the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
A year ago. We were looking at a 1.5% 10-year. We're at about a 270 right now. In fact, right now it's trading at 274. And so we've had a little more than 100 basis point move in interest rates. And if you, for instance, bought a 10-year on May 1st, you have now lost about 10% of your investment. And so,
if you sell it.
That's the impact of interest rates on a long-term obligation. If you look at the traditional term structure of the 10-year treasury, that is, what are the components that build that rate? Traditionally, the 10-year treasury rate is the inflation rate plus 3% plus a little extra, a little juice. Think about that. So if the Fed were to completely withdraw its support of the 10-year right now, you could expect the 10-year treasury to be somewhere around 5 or 5.5, which means that you could potentially lose somewhere between another 15 to 20% of your investment on a long-term bond. So that's the concern that we have about the 10-year. And the 10-year is the obligation that drives a whole lot of stuff in the economy, primarily mortgage rates. And so the Fed is walking a very thin line in this exit that they're planning. The other two things that we're concerned about are Europe. Europe now is out of recession officially. That was announced yesterday, but they're still in not very good shape, and Europe's recovery is going to depend very much on China, which is their second largest trading partner, and China may actually be softening. The official estimate is for them to have 7% GDP, but I don't know anybody who believes that. So you've got One thing that is clear about China's GDP is that about 60% of it is funded by credit and investment and rather than consumption. And you compare that to the U.S., for instance, and that's just a massive credit bubble that has formed in China. And there is a question about whether they can work their way out of it. So China is a big unknown that will have a lot of impact. Okay, I'm going to turn now to the first tab, and that is the defined benefit plan. This reflects the results as of the close of fiscal year on June 30th. And we had a pretty good year.
Mm-hmm.
The plan all in did 11.19%. And there is, as I said, this is a new report. If you look in the upper right-hand corner, it shows sort of a shorthand recapitulation of the performance. And you see there that the fund began the year at $3.9 million. There were $418,000 in contributions. There were $263,000 paid out. The net cash flow was positive at $154,000. We earned dividends and interest of $15,000, and we had capital gains of $415,000 to finish the year at $4.5 million. As I said, the total fund did 11.19. We have a little bit different allocation in here than the other plan. The portion there that's identified as common stock is our energy overweight. You can see that during the year, energy trailed the broader market. That was primarily something that happened during the second quarter. All of the energy stocks sold off, but we continue to have a lot of confidence in the long-term of the long-term appropriateness of energy. You can see over the last 3 years, it's done 19.9%, which has done about 1.5% better than the S&P. The mutual funds, the large cap funds, mid cap, did 22.5% for the year. Yeah. Why didn't we have it all in there?
Yeah, come on.
it was a pretty good year in the stock market. It was hard to miss. Now you see in the quarter that we trailed a little bit, and that's because we have a commitment to value. The value stocks tend to be a little more rate sensitive, so they trail the benchmark a little bit. But when we get to a dip, they're going to do better than the growth stocks. The international fund does not have a full year on it yet, but you can see it did very well, 1.16%, while the international index was off 1.6. The bond market as a whole was down 3.36 for the quarter, and in the fixed income universe, that is the equivalent of a bloodbath.
You still there, Rick? Hello?
Rick?
Okay.
As soon as he mentioned bloodbath, he went away.
Yes, he did. There's the phone
number. Try it again.
Yeah.
This is the number here.
He probably doesn't know.
Show's still connected, but...
Yeah, it does. Yeah, okay.
Okay, all in. And signing in. Network cable is not... What?
Just dial.
Well, I was doing a sign-in.
Oh.
This phone setup.
Oh, it'll just take a second. It's loading in.
It just decided it wasn't really working.
Yeah, I guess. Yay, new phone.
It was doing so well, too.
It was. This was working quite fine.
Let's see something. No. It's not going to let us dial in. Why don't you plug that thing and plug it back in so that, because it's trying to find a connection there and it's saying there's not one.
Did I just disconnect it maybe with my feet?
Well, it shows it's actually loading. This is what it was doing before. Well, it should be fine.
Just on the West Coast, even though Columbia bought all, I mean, there's...
Right. They're still operating under West Coast Trust. They're still under that Columbia umbrella, and they may change the name down the road, but they have elected at this point not
okay,
to.
Okay, but they're under Columbia's...
Under the Columbia umbrella.
If I remember what Rick said, West Coast Trust has a substantially larger portfolio than Columbia Trust, so
they kind of see the value in that more than...
Okay.
Now you should be able to
dial in.
You don't have to dial the one.
He's retiring at the end of the year. What's that?
You don't have to dial the one.
We don't? Okay. Is it going to mess us up? Let's.
Maybe not. It may still work.
I know with cell phones you don't have to, but right. On land, you know. So how do we do this?
There it goes. He's on his phone, so he's still talking.
Either that or don't dial the one.
Do you have a different number?
We can call us a alert. The point at which you said bloodbath, we lost him. We thought he left.
Sorry, I lost you. I didn't realize I'd lost you there.
Yeah, no, we figured you were still. As soon as you said in the fixed market, it was considered a bloodbath. You went dead.
Oh, okay. Well, it was bad. Trust me.
I guess we got spared the gory details.
Well, the market was a bloodbath. I guess the message is that our allocation did much better. We were only down 1.6.
Yeah.
And that's because of our focus on investment grade credit. And an underweight on government credit. So I'm going to turn the tab now to the defined contribution plan. That we looked at was the high level look of the DB plan. The DB plan did 10.2% for the year. The energy fund did 13.29. The equity funds did 22.39. And we don't have a full year in that international fund. It did 1.16 versus minus 1.62 for the international index. And you can see here we have a stronger commitment to bonds in this portfolio. And so we were a little closer to the benchmark there, although we still beat the benchmark.
Mike was just saying that we can't wait to see the actuarial report because it should, this good a year should have bumped that up pretty good.
I think it will help. I think it will help.
Yeah.
Okay, Rick. Go ahead.
Okay, now, just a couple of points on the, I think I was cut off when I was mentioning this before. If you'll turn the page on the DC report, you'll see a combination bar and line graph called market value versus invested capital.
Mm-hmm.
And that, what that shows is the market value in the lines, and the bars represent the money that you have invested. And so if you're above the line, that means you're playing with house money.
Yay!
Okay. The next chart shows the evolution of the asset allocation over time, looking back four quarters.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't change significantly, but the next time you see this, you'll see a change in the asset allocation. And then I'm going to turn two more pages. There is a report called Cash Flow and Market Value Summary. What this shows is the actual cash activity period to period, showing showing cash inflows, cash outflows, income, expenses, and investment gains and losses. So, if that's, we have a few other options on this report. If this is of value to you, we can leave it in there. If not, we can take it out.
We're getting there. It's on, you see that, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, is it?
Now, I'm going to turn the tab, and we now have the money market account for the DB plan. You know, there's nothing that ever happens in this.
Right.
And I will turn another tab, and we have the capital growth account. And what you see here is now we have a more aggressive allocation. And for the fiscal year ending June 30th, the capital growth account did 14.8%.
Yeah.
Over the last years, it's done 12.59.
Yeah.
So I think that's above the projection for the that the actuary has allowed for. So we've added some value back to the plan there. Mm-hmm.
They're at like 6 or 7%.
Yeah, they always are.
Yeah, good.
So we've had a good run here, and you know the challenge now is after you have a good run, you don't want to give it back. So we've got to be pretty pretty judicious about that. And then we turning the next tab, we have the benchmark account. And we have that in a combination of ultra short-term money market funds or funds that are just a tad longer than a money market fund, so that we have virtually no interest rate risk in the portfolio. And that's the, you know, that's going to be the name of the game. Is we know in this account we're paying out benefits on a regular basis, and we don't want to be paying them out from a depleting fund. We want to be paying it out from a fund that has constant value. So I think the next, as far as the rest of this year goes, I think I told you last year that right at the beginning of the year that if everything went just right, we would probably have an up market this year. I am of the opinion that the third quarter may see a correction of some nature. You know, we could see 6% of that, but I still remain pretty confident that we're going to be up pretty significantly for the year. And then it's anybody's guess what happens in 2014, because that's when we will begin to see the full impact of the end of quantitative easing. Now, that is good news and bad news. You have to bear in mind that there's going to be a short-term panic around the end of quantitative easing, because people are going to say, "Oh my gosh, the government, you know, the Fed is not supporting asset prices anymore." But the Fed is not going to exit unless and until it sees improvement in unemployment and the beginnings of increase in the inflation rate. And absent that, quantitative easing, you know, it may begin to taper off, but it will not end. The Fed is not going to walk away. What we really need is a few adults in Washington
who good luck
will advocate for fiscal stimulus rather than monetary stimulus. And by that I mean, you know, pretty dramatic tax reform, probably some more spending where it would make sense. But, you know, if a frog had wings, he wouldn't land on his butt every time he jumped. So it's sort of a, you know,
I haven't heard that one before.
Me either. Well, that's That's what my father used to always tell me when I would say, if I had this or if I had that. So the reality is that frogs don't have wings. And the reality also is that we may not get adults in Washington anytime soon. So
Rick, who's going to be the next Fed chairman?
Well, you know, you have the debate going back and forth between Yellen and Summers, but if you really had a Machiavellian personality like some people say I do, it may be that this whole debate about Yellen and Summers is just really a lot of noise, and the White House is basically rolling both of those names out to try to get people feeling negative about both of them, and at that point they're going to roll out Tim Geithner.
Interesting theory.
So that would be the Machiavellian approach. If you go with the conventional wisdom, the White House and the insiders want Summers, and the academics and the adults in the outside of Wall Street want Yellen. But it may be that Geithner is the final candidate. I will not be surprised if it's Geithner.
Well, I wasn't impressed with him in his last role. What would that do to the economy?
The president loves him. I think that the days of the all-powerful Fed chairman might be behind us. I think that over the last year, the voting members of the Board of Governors have acquired a lot more say than they had under Greenspan or earlier under Bernanke. And I think especially with Yellen, I think that there will have to be a lot more consensus building in the Fed. I don't think the president in particular likes that. I think the president wants somebody that he can call and jawbone with.
Yeah.
Okay. I know we're on a tight time frame. I think we need to talk about cash.
Okay.
I signed two things in early July when Tim was out of town. That hasn't hit these books yet.
This is June 30th.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think those withdrawals were till July, were they, Linda?
They were not. Yeah, it's in July.
And did they, in fact, become withdrawals?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Both of them took lump sums. We have two more retirements coming up. JJ's probably told you about that. One definitely will take a lump sum, which is the smaller of the two. The other one is talking, last time when I talked to him, they were talking about possibly taking their DC plan out as lump sum and taking the annuity as the DB as an annuity, and that one's a pretty good size one.
It's a $500,000.
Okay. Is there a way, I know I've asked for this in the past and it doesn't seem like we want to get it out there, but we really need that information on an email before. We need the minutes from the last one and we need the email so that we can have an understanding so we can have a discussion when we get here instead of just trying to understand it while we're here instead of having a good discussion about which way to go. And we're just not, haven't been able to get that information in writing for us before the meetings. It's important to us. So whatever we can do that. So this 940, I'm looking at the very back and the benchmark. Actually, it's the very last page. It looks like we've got $940,000 in cash.
Let me get a more up-to-date number here, just a minute.
Hang on, Rick.
Tim, what you're asking for is to the committee. What you'd like is minutes from the last meeting ahead of time, so you can look at them,
right,
make some changes, and approve them.
Right.
And like what we get at the Council of or other committees, get a staff report pertinent to the issues you might have to discuss. So you can look at the staff report
you know, Dennis rather than try and figure it out at the time of the meeting.
Correct.
And that's a reasonable request, and in fact, that's what happens at the council level, the planning commission level, and a lot of other committee task force. So what you're asking for is probably should be a standard practice with every committee.
And it was for a while, but it went away, and I can't seem to get it back.
So that needs to happen. Okay.
So.
Okay, so as of right now, there's $142,700 in the money market account. And capital growth account right now is 2.4 billion, and the
we missed that one. Capital growth is what?
3.417. Mm-hmm. And the liquidity account, market account, has $941,875. $183,000 of that is in the money market.
Okay.
So we have enough to cover if the large retirement decides to take the entirety as a lump sum.
Yes, we do. We have immediate liquidity on everything in the benchmark account, so
right.
We don't have to worry about where the market is.
Okay.
Okay. So the retirements that are on the horizon right now, once again, those amounts are
35,000, I believe, is for the small one, and then the large one, if the whole lump sum, it's just about $500,000.
Okay, but that one may take, is that whole $500,000 both of them combined?
Yeah.
Okay, so part DC and part DB.
And they may take the DC as a lump sum.
And the DC is a little under 200,000, if I remember correctly.
Okay, so DC is a little under 200,000 or approximately 200,000. And the DB, at this point, they may take annuity.
Right. And they won't know until
right.
We get the paperwork back from the actuary.
So how far is this out? Is this the next 3 months, 6 months?
Probably less than that. They're very anxious. I've got a phone call.
I mean this information kind of in terms of the retirements over the next...
Oh,
6 to 12 months.
Next 6 to 12 months. And part of my frustration, and I emphasize this with employees, we need 3 months.
Right.
And in these two cases, both of them left very quickly, which made it... And
bad language.
Yeah, which didn't know that they were going to leave until they left. And
okay. Okay.
So that made it much shorter.
Okay.
But other than that, I'm trying to think if you talked to anybody.
I haven't had any other
questions. Is the notification requirement just something that you ask for as a matter of courtesy? Or is there some requirement somewhere that provides that they have to give you a certain amount of notice?
There's nothing that tells us that they have to give us a certain amount of notice, but when they come in, like if Rebecca walked in today and says, I'm giving my 2 weeks notice, I let them know that it could take as much as 3 months before they would give their retirement. And whenever we have retirement meetings, I emphasize to people,
yes,
please give me 3 months.
And I tell my staff the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But other than these two retirements that we're just talking about, you're foreseeing over the next 6 to 12 months, perhaps some other long-term employees retiring with similar amounts, or you're not sure about that?
I'm not sure about. I have one that came and talked to me, but there's a lot of ands, ifs, and buts before he would walk out the door, and a lot of it's dealing with.
Okay.
Okay.
So what we're dealing with is essentially in the next quarter we could see a need for about $235,000 in cash.
But something I can do and I will do, that the moment that somebody does ask me to send the actuarial information, I'll send you, you know, that we have one going to the actuarial.
Okay.
This is approximately how much it is, so at least you know, and how
That'd
much the DB and how much
right.
the DC.
Okay.
So.
And does the DB and DC all the DC comes out of the plan, the DC plan itself. It doesn't come out of the benchmark.
Right.
And we've got on the DC, what do we have in terms of cash ability on the DC?
Just one second.
Not very much.
Mm. About 68,000 or something?
We have 61,000, but again, we have daily liquidity in that, so you don't worry about liquidity. We can sell anytime we need to.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay, I need to excuse myself. I'm sorry. I've got to get down the road for a meeting.
Rickley, thank you for your time.
Yes, sir. Okay. Thank you.
I look forward to seeing you all in October.
Indeed.
We look forward to seeing you as well.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Good.
That worked well.
Yes. I like that. Okay.
So he was right when he said it looked like a good year.
Yeah.
The year's not over.
I know. I was waiting for you to say that.
today, standing 2%
right,
down.
Right.
Is it already?
Yeah.
Close to 2 now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just almost impossible.
He said 250. Is it even worse now? Or
That was up to the moment, yeah. Okay, well, I too need to go.
Is it a good time to buy or sell?
Okay.
I think good time to buy today.
I'd buy.
Well, is there anything else anybody needs, knows that we need to take care of at this point
So we don't
in time?
Need to make any moves on funds because everything is there and it's adequate. Okay.
Yeah. We'll keep hold on that. And then
I
October.
Will give you 3 months.
October for the next meeting, but we'll get those from Rick.
Yeah.
As to what potential dates that we've got on that.
Okay.
So, all right.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks.
See you, kiddo. See ya.